finish up, but not today. I still want to speak about eventually at one point the Malchus and the Mashiach parts of the Kuach on 16th century Smicha, because we did the Smicha parts I think quite well, and then we did a little bit of Kiddush HaChodesh when it was Rosh Chodesh that day. But I still do want to finish that because we invested in it and it's really also very interesting material. But for the beginning of the year, we said we were going to try to do a little bit of Perek Chelek. So I think that was Robbie's idea, or maybe that was the consensus view, whatever it was. So, since we kept pushing off and we never got to it, so we'll try at least to begin. So, of course, the problem is, again, it's hard to move on this also, but we'll try to go a little bit, try to get as much as we can, but to try to speak about some of the Divrei Agada. But before we do that, there are just two big, there are several themes that come up just in the Mishnah and that, of course, are broader relevance. So just, we won't be able to do these things comprehensively, but at least we could talk about them, and then some other time we can fill in the gaps. So the Mishnah says, "Kol Yisrael Yesh Lehem Chelek Le'olam Haba." This already is a very fascinating thing, something we should speak about. Shenemar Ve'amech Kulam Tzadikim Olam Yirshu Aretz Netzer Mata'ai So the Mepharshim already note, this is, we're not going to discuss today, that what do you mean, Kol Yisrael Yesh Lehem Chelek Le'olam Haba? There are two problems. Number one is that it's followed up with Ve'elush Elam Chelek Le'olam Haba. So if you say Kol Yisrael and then you say Elush Elahem, obviously, if you say, even if you said Yisrael Yesh Lehem Chelek Le'olam Haba, and then you said the Elu She'en Lahem, that would also be a little bit clumsy, but at least then it's manageable. But when you say Kol Yisrael and then you say the Elu She'en Lahem, obviously that is more of a problem. Number two, of course, is the implication that only Kol Yisrael Yesh Lahem Chelek Olam Haba. We know from Chazal, and Rambam, of course, codifies this in Hilchos Tshuva and elsewhere, that non-Jews, who live a proper life, also Yesh Lahem Chelek Le'olam Haba. Nothing in the words Kol Yisrael that is b'mayit other people. And in fact, if you put the two together, you might have a solution. So I want to speak about that, but not for today's topic, but just to raise the point. And that is that maybe the idea seems to be, and a number of the Mepharshim on the Mishnah already say this, and it has roots in other Chazals, that while Olam Haba is something which is open, it's an opportunity and it's a possibility, for all people who are created B'Tzelem Elokim and who live a certain lifestyle. But Klal Yisrael has, a certain, head start or benefit. Its relationship to this opportunity is different. And that for several reasons. Number one, because again, the lifestyle is more imposing, and also, as we've been discussing all year round, in comparing Bnei Noach, the life of Bnei Noach, and the life of a member of Klal Yisrael, right, that there are qualitative differences there. That in one case, it's about maintaining a certain minimum, and again, these promote certainly Tzelem Elokim. Whereas the lifestyle in Yadus immerses one in every aspect of his life in a certain appreciation for transcendence and Kedusha. While this is something which is accessible to all, it's kind of a default in a way for people who live a Klal Yisrael lifestyle, whereas there's a certain kind of interesting dialectical tension here. On the one hand, to be a Ben Noach, takes much less effort, as we know. And as we've discussed all year, that's the reason why Azharaso Zuhi Bisaso, because there isn't that much that is required. And it's, more easily accomplished, and therefore its neglect, is, more willful. There's less diffusion, and therefore it's all focused, more on a minimum group of obligations, or prohibitions. And at the same time, the demands, they say, are much less. Whereas for Klal Yisrael, this is an immersive experience, but it's also much more ambitious a lifestyle, but it's also a much more demanding lifestyle. So when we speak about, you know, entree or earning credit, you know, to enter Chai Olam Haba, on the one hand, you know, the Ben Noach has an easier obstacles to overcome. In other words, in terms of his lifestyle. But at the same time, somebody who is a part of Klal Yisrael gets the benefit of that immersion and transcendence and Kedusha. That's one aspect of it. The second, of course, is the idea, perhaps, of Kol Yisrael, and this is something that we've been talking about all year as well. Kol Yisrael yesh lehem chelek le'olam haba, so maybe the idea is that when it comes to Klal Yisrael, there really are two aspects, as we've been saying all year. Number one is the individual, but the individual is really supported by, you know, the framework of being part of the Klal. He is born into a certain heritage, and there's a certain protection that he, you know, benefits from by being part of that tzibur, the long history of the tzibur, and the present scope of the tzibur. So just as this has impact on things like the corporate presence of the Mesorah, you know, and issues of memory, you know, Atem Nitzavim, and all the other things that we've been discussing this year, so too, it has a certain benefit in terms of the default of Kol Yisrael Yesh Lehem Chelek L'Olam Haba. And therefore, even when we say, perhaps, the Elu She'en Lehem Chelek L'Olam Haba, what we're saying is that B'toras, a member of Klal Yisrael, everybody has that status and stature. And, you know, that has huge impact on the calculus. The Elu She'en Lehem Chelek L'Olam Haba, you know, both as, here's where the Mefarshim have different views, there are certain individuals whose behavior is so inconsistent that they lose that. So both in terms of what we were speaking about before, the two sides of the dialectic, the greater demands, but at the same time, the benefits that accrue from that. So it's Kol Yisrael Yeshem Chelek Olam Haba, and it's Elu She'en Lehem Chelek Olam Haba. You can ruin it, you know, if you behave in a way which is particularly antithetical, incompatible with being a member of Klal Yisrael. So that, I think there are two points. Number one, you have to live up to, although in, by the default, being a regular member of Klal Yisrael, even if you have individual foibles, you still come under the rubric of Klal Yisrael, and therefore Yesh Lehem Chelek L'Olam Haba. Secondly, and this is something that Mefarshim discuss, you know, a person can have maybe chelik l'olam haba b'toras chad min atzibur, you know, but maybe he doesn't deserve that, you know, as an individual. And again, if his behavior is particularly egregious, then he can really write himself out of Klal Yisrael and out of that standard completely, just as he can for certain halachos, as we know. If not, there's an in-between status, you know, which has impact. That is that, you know, he as a member of the tzibur, but not as somebody who deserves that individually. Whereas, you know, umasa olam, this is more seen as a individual achievement, not so much b'toras being a member, but and the, you know, immersive lifestyle that implies, but you know, the capacity as an individual to live a proper good life and to live up to the charge of being a Tzelem Elokim, and how that is played up. So that's just something to think more about. And of course, the question of Bechiras Yisrael comes into this very much. Skulas Yisrael, Bechiras Yisrael, Kol Yisrael Yesh Lehem Chelek L'Olam Haba. So those who think that this has a, you know, a more you know, metaphysical expression, you know, Rabbi Levi and the Maral, etc. So for them, Kol Yisrael Yesh Lehem Chelek L'Olam Haba has a certain significance, and that's part of the distinction. I've just suggested an alternative explanation. Either way, the idea of gerim, who don't have seemingly that element, is also partly resolved by the question of Kol Yisrael and being attached to Klal Yisrael as a member of the Tzibor, both to its history and to its present hekev and to its lifestyle. So that's the first point, that Kol Yisrael Yeshan Chel Kol Olam Haba can still accommodate other nations. There's an appreciation for Tzelem Elokim, even though the dynamic might be a little different in different ways. And also, the Elush Elam Chelik Le'olam Haba, despite being, having this default, and also the part of it that flows from identifying with Klal Yisrael as a Tzibor, it can still be possible that Ein Lahem Chelik Le'olam Haba. Then the Mishnah explains some examples of this. Ha'omer Ein Tchias HaMesa Min HaTorah, Ein Torah Min HaShamayim, Apikoros, Rabbi Kiva Omer Afakori B'Svar Machitzonim, Alokhe Shalamaka, Omer Kol Hamakla Asher Santi Mitzrayim Lo Asim Alecha, Geni Hashem Afakha, B'Shol Omer, Afahoga Shem Bo'osiyosav. So again, we probably should look at these different categories, both per se, and also to see what the pattern is. Then the Mishnah concludes, Shlosha Malachim V'Arba Hadyota Seilem Chelik Lom Abba, Shlosha Malachim Yerubam Acha V'Menashe, right? Rabbi Yehuda Omer Menashe Yesh Lo Chelik Lom Abba, Shinam V'Yit Palel Elav, V'Yishmat Chinaso, V'Yishiveyu Yerushalayim L'Malchuso, Omer L'Malchuso Hashiva Lo, V'Lo L'Chai Olam Abba, Hashivo, rather. And then Arba Hadyotos, Bilam, Doeg, and Achitofal, and Gehazi. So again, if we had the time, to identify, what are the common traits of these three kings and these four very prominent people. And obviously some of them are not Jewish, so this, of course, feeds into, again, the notion that Tzelem Elokim has the capacity for Chelek Le'olam Haba, even if the dynamic is a little bit different. Then the Gemara begins, and we're not going to do that today either, with a discussion of a person who's kofer b'tchias ha-mesim. It's fascinating that that's the first item in the Mishnah. It's even more fascinating if you know the controversy in the works of the Rambam, what the Rambam's view was regarding tchias ha-mesim, when he emphasized it and when he didn't. Either way, the Gemara says that a person who's kofer b'tchias ha-mesim, the reason that ein lo chelik le'olam haba is because of the concept of midah keneged midah, shekol midosav shalei kadosh baruch hu midah keneged midah, and the Gemara goes on to discuss that. We'll get to that. The Mishnah is important here, for two big reasons. One is the one that we started with, which requires much more elaboration and detail. Again, this idea, and that has a double point. Number one, again, this question of Klal Yisrael's status and non-Jew status, that bigger picture, Kol Yisrael, Elish Ein Lahem, a non-Jew's relationship to Olam Haba as well. And of course, the second is the relationship between the Schar of Olam Haba and other Schar Ba'onesh, that we speak about. The Ramban has a famous passage in his Perashat HaTorah, and other Mefarshim, of course, as well. Why it is that the Torah itself, Torah Shebichsav, is so quiet about the whole category of Olam Haba, even when it comes to Schar V'Onesh, that the emphasis is so much on Olam Hazeh. So that question and the different answers to that question are very important also in understanding theologically and philosophically. Like, what role does Olam Haba play? What role does Olam Haba play in terms of Schar V'Onesh, Yemos HaMashiach, Tchias HaMesim, and of course, Schar V'Onesh Be'Olam Hazeh? Are these just different categories or just different levels? Or do they correspond to very different things? The Rambam, in particular, in his different treatment of Olam Haba, for example, Yemos HaMashiach and Tchias HaMesim, a part of the story there is the Rambam's understanding that Chai Olam Haba is something very different. And that while the others come under the rubric, let's say, of Schar and Onesh or there are different phases, etc., that the Chai Olam Haba for the Rambam is, you know, represents the natural fruition, you know, of a life, you know, that is meaningfully lived. And that's why, according to the Rambam, it's not so much a technical schar ba'onesh, like if you're good and do everything right, you'll get, you know, that ultimate, you know, benefit, that ultimate prize of Olam Haba. Of course, it is an ultimate prize, but, you know, that's not the way that the Rambam kind of looks at it, or the Ramban for that matter. More to the point is that this, you know, is the natural result of who you are and what you've been focusing on and the kind of life, you know, and values, you know, the kind of life you've lived and the kind of values that you've cultivated, which is why for the Rambam, achieving Olam Haba, you know, is a naturalistic attainment rather than a, you know, something that, you know, is in the normal rubric of schar. For that reason also, the Rambam felt that the prerequisites to achieving this, because they are, you know, a function of living, you know, a certain minimum level of meaningful life, are not negotiable, and they're not so much subject to, you know, to the normal rules of ones and shkaga, you know, and zadon, etc. This is the, you know, what later became, you know, famously known as the idea of a nebuch apikores, and still an apikores, which flows from this perspective. And the Rambam's view is that, as you know, the Rambam's view in general is that intellectual perfection, focused on Torah matters very much, is, you know, a major aspect of spiritual life. And therefore, the right opinions, the right beliefs, are a natural prerequisite for entry, you know, into Olam Haba. And therefore, why, you know, you didn't, you know, cultivate these prerequisite beliefs is less important than the fact that you did not. That's a little bit of a harsh view that the Rambam has, which I've said in the past, I think other people, other legitimate, you know, Mefarshim probably disagree with, and that, you know, their view is probably, even though we accept the Rambam's view on Yigimali Karim, but their view is probably a very acceptable one, maybe even the predominant one, but it is the Rambam's view nonetheless. And it goes into his, you know, both, there's a kula in Kol Yisrael Yeshlem Chelek Leolam Haba, in the sense that it is, they say, a default, natural, you know, passage from one state to another. That's one side of it. And the other side of it is that, you know, it's hard to compromise on the natural prerequisites, you know, that that enable, you know, that transition. That's a very critical point in the Rambam that not everybody agrees with. But that's why in this Mishnah, of course, you have... next time we'll do it. That's why in this Mishnah, of course, you have the beginnings in the Rambam's understanding and, you know, the Pashtus, of a belief system that is set up, you know, as a prerequisite. So the first thing we're reading about is Ha'omer Ein Tchias HaMesim in HaTorah, then Ein Torah Min HaShemayim, Ve'apikores, and Kore B'Sfar Machitzonim, again, Loche Shalamako, we need to explain, and Hoges Shem Bos Yosef. But as you know, the Rambam in, you know, in this Mishnah, in the Hakdama to Techelek, you know, extensively developed his Yud Gimel Ikare Emuna. He explains there that these are, you know, this is where he has this shita, that these are the natural, but, you know, uncompromising requirements of achieving this state. So for the Rambam, these are the belief system that accompanies the action system in Yadus is critical. Again, in recent times, we've spoken about this too, you know, people have come to question whether or not Yahadus is a religion which, you know, makes theological demands, belief demands, you know, on its adherents. You know, it's popular to say, you know, they all quote Mendelssohn, you know, that the, you know, the one belief, you know, that Yahadus has, you know, is that there's no requirement of belief. And it's very popular to focus on the fact that Yahadus as a religion is unusually focused on actions, Taryag Mitzvos, and, you know, the norm that's actually concretely implementing the norm and how you do it, as we know, that's what we do all day, right? We study the law. We're engaged in Tzivui Hashem, and all of our lives are immersed with, you know, Chiyuvim, Isurim, Mitzvos, Chiyuvim. It's a very action-oriented religion. The fact that we have Taryag Mitzvos, according to many of them, Farshim, right, based on the Gemara in the end of Makos, and that they correspond, according to some, to Ramach Ivarim and Shasa Gidim, you know, is a way of saying that, you know, our lives, you know, revolve around, you know, these actions. They define our life. There's a certain equilibrium and a holistic, just like the body is, you know, has a certain homeostasis, so too, you know, the mitzvos provide that for us. And, you know, being a good Jew in your heart, you know, is, which many, you know, other Jews are, is insufficient, clearly, in Yahadus. You can be very well-meaning and you can, you know, have a lot of right beliefs. But at the end of the day, it's a very measurable religion, and it's defined in terms of objective norms, you know, even with shiurim, you know, that define them. And you miss out, you know, there's such a thing as onus, and there's such a thing as shogeg, as we discussed before, when it comes to actions. But it's a very objective norm-oriented religion. So people have taken that to, you know, to a certain extreme, to suggest that, you know, there are no tenets, there are no, you know, beliefs, there are no required beliefs. It's all about, you know, performing, you know, the mitzvahs. And like most extreme statements, that's, of course, an unacceptable exaggeration. You know, in the last number of decades, a couple of books have been written, you know, suggesting that the Rambam invented Ikare Emuna. And it is true that the Rambam codified Ikare Emuna, that he expanded on the notion. It also is true that the Rambam was, you know, is theologically oriented and philosophically oriented, and therefore Ikare Emuna, it's probably not a coincidence that he's the one who codified them and expanded them, you know, and thrust them, you know, to the forefront. At the same time, again, this each of these topics requires a more discussion, but I think it's important methodologically to know that, you know, the Rambam's role, you know, in Ikare Emuna is really not different so much from his role in any other sugya in Shas. I mean, every day we, you know, we open up the Rambam to see how he reads the Gemaras, and we know that he has a very expansive view, that he takes global perspectives, that he doesn't just follow the sugya and write it over. You know, the path of least resistance. The Rambam thinks deeply and widely, you know, about every issue, and frequently, you know, has expansive perspectives on things and very singular approaches to things, whether it's Talmud al-Yorah le'emkein noto rishus mirabo or smicha or any other topic in Shas. So that the Rambam should have, you know, you know, taken an important role in codifying and in some cases expanding and in providing, you know, perspective on the, you know, some of the more amorphous issues about Ikare Emuna, especially given his also philosophical orientation. But even just as a halachist who reads sources, you know, in a very creative and dynamic and global way, is not surprising, but it's not atypical at all. And of course, most of the Makoros of the Rambam's Ikare Emuna come from the Mishnah and from the Gemara, many of them in Perek Chelek, these sugyas, and some of them in other places, in Brachos and in Tainus, and so on and so forth. It is true that there were people who disagreed with the Rambam's scheme of classification, or who disagreed here and there with, you know, some of his formulations or even some of the items on his list. Lekula and Lechumra, right? Again, there's a lot of discussion about Tgeas HaMesim and whether Brias HaOlam should be on the list. There's a discussion about the collapsing, you know, of some of the, different requirements, you know, into smaller ones. Rabbi Yosef Albo, again, this is for another topic, Rabbi Yosef Albo and Rabbi Chasdei Kreskes, and then, you know, of course, the notion of, Ikari Amuna at all, as opposed to, you know, everything being an Ikari Amuna or Benel. So there's a lot of discussion about schemes and numbers and even particular details. I always like to point out that Rabbi Chasdei Kreskes, for example, substituted Avas Hashem as a mechanism. You know, he took basically the Rambam's scheme in many things, and where the Rambam has, you know, intellectual perfection, you know, Chasdei Kreskes will stick in Avas Hashem as a shir in Hashgacha. We were discussing yesterday about Hashgacha as a prerequisite for Nevuah. How far you get, you know, using the Rambam's, let's say, famous, palace mashal, you know, in the end of Mor Nebuchim, you know, what brings you, you know, to the inner sancta, you know, is it Avas Hashem? Is it Yedias Hashem? Is it, you know, rationality? So there are significant differences, and it's a fascinating topic. But none of this, you know, justifies the conclusion that Yahadus is only about actions, and that it doesn't have minimum belief requirements. It would be, frankly, absurd and illogical if that were to be the case. Obviously, the Chiddush of Yahadus is the concretization and objectification of certain principles in halachic norms. The idea that would take the place of those principles or beliefs or, you know, some measure of theology and truth just doesn't make any sense. It would basically strip the religion. It would make it, you know, totally formalistic, and that obviously wasn't mitzvot anashim melumada, was not to be the goal. So the Rambam, not coincidentally, develops a Yud Gimel Ikare Emuna in this Mishnah, and establishes some of the parameters of that. We're not going to go into Yud Gimel Ikare Emuna right now, or in this, because that's not, I think, what we wanted to do. But one could do that. That's a great exercise. I mean, of course, beginning with Anokhi Hashem Elokecha, you know, in Parshas Aseres Hadibros, you know, in Yisro and Vayeschana. But part of the approach of the Rambam, you know, in codifying Ikari Amuna, and which is also part, to be fair, of what, you know, people have suggested, is his emphasis on Divrei Agada, which is our topic. So a lot of the Gemaras that speak about the requirements of belief, you know, the prerequisites, you know, the ticket into Olam Haba, but again, not as not an artificial ticket, but, you know, one which, you know, are like basic core principles and commitments that just define, you know, living a life of Kedusha as a Jew, come from this parak and from Divrei Agada, already in this Mishnah, you could say, you know, partially Divrei Agada. And the question is, what is the value, what is the significance of that? And there's a certain irony in that too, because again, in the more uncritical world out there, people have the impression that the Rambam, you know, was very dismissive of Divrei Agada, that while he was obviously, you know, the great codifier of halacha, you know, when it came to Chazal, you know, he was much more, it took a much more liberal, we'll call it for the moment, approach. And while that is partially true, it's again something which, taken out of context, is not accurate at all. The truth is that Robbie asked me to do some things in Parakeh like that, I think was the idea, right, to spend some time on Divrei Agada of Chazal. So it's fascinating to note that, you know, the Rambam, in his Hakdama Techelek, you know, where he focuses so much on Ikare Amuna, also spends a good deal of time in the very beginning discussing different perspectives on Chazal and how one should relate to Chazal. He doesn't tell you exactly why he does this, but it's implicit because since he's about to codify and develop, you know, very seriously these Ikare Amuna, and many of them are rooted in Gemaras that you might call Agadita, so Dafka, the Rambam, wants to highlight, you know, two things, two opposite, again, perspectives that are important. One is the reverence that is required in handling and dealing with Divrei Chazal, and at the same time, the awareness that, you know, reverence is not the same as, you know, a literal orientation. And on the contrary, sometimes a literal orientation, you know, detracts from reverence. Reverence is required sometimes to navigate what it is that Chazal had in mind. But the Rambam understood and linked these two issues that the development of a theological framework, you know, which is binding in every way, is connected with our attitude towards Chazal, towards Medrash, and towards Agada. Of course, the Rambam isn't the first person to address this topic, but it is fascinating that he chose to address it right here. And in a way, in addition to Medrash or Agada being partly the source of the Rambam's, you know, very important and binding view, which is interesting. Again, you know, I'll just mention Agav, since we're doing the topics. You know, we saw this, you know, we see this again and again. Generally, the Rambam shies away from quoting Chazals or Agadita or Medrash, you know, in Yad HaChazaka per se. It's a very halachically oriented work. When he does quote Chazal, it's always particularly significant. So yesterday, for example, we were talking about Talmud al-Yoral Imkei Nafal Rishus Samirabo and so on, right? We noted that the Rambam is very expansive in his discussion of, you know, kimoreid bashchina, kichole kimaharher achar hakadosh baruch hu, a lot of these are divrei agada. But for the Rambam, you know, because something is divrei agada, that doesn't per se mean it isn't an important hashkafic source which underpins, you know, a certain halachic, you know, perspective. So the Rambam's treatment of the status of agadita in the context of formulating Yud Gimli Kari Amuna is part of that link. At the same time, there's another connection, and that is the parallel itself. I think the Rambam implicitly is telling us that matters of Hashkafa and Amuna are, certain matters of Amuna are binding, and other matters which are not binding and where there can be maybe different perspectives legitimately are still very critical and very, you know, important. And at the same time, they're different than halacha. Right? They're connected with, they're binding, but they're dynamic. The way that we approach these questions is sometimes different. In the same way that you know, we sometimes approach a halachic text differently than we approach a midrashic or agaitic text. We approach both of them with reverence, but you know, with a different set of expectations, and there's an overlap or a parallel, you know, between these two ideas as well. The idea of Mishpat Echad Yehalachem, for example, you know, in most matters of Hashkafa or Medrash, is less compelling than it is in Halacha, right? And you could say that the Divrei Elu Ve'elu Divrei Elokim Chayim, let's say, you know, Hekef, is greater in matters of Hashkafa than Halacha, as long as you're not talking about, you know, basic and core topics. When it comes to the core issues, the Yud Gimel Ikare Amuna, for example, according to the Rambam, So there, even more than mishpat echad, it's not just a question of, you know, uniformity of form, as we say. It's a question of these, the ones that are defining in core, and where there is no range, you know, are ones which are even more absolute and more definitional. They don't even require, they don't even, you know, allow for pteranus, as we discussed. Anyways, this idea of the status of Dibrei Chazal and Medrash Agadata, of course, has a long history. Already at the time of the Gaonim, there was much discussion whether Dibrei Agada is binding, whether it is literal, whether it is historical. There are statements, you know, that we have in Gaonic literature from Rav Sadia Gaon, Rav Shrira Gaon, Rav Hai Gaon, Rav Shmuel HaNagid, which seem to be, again, very liberal in suggesting that, not that we, chas v'shalom, play, you know, fast and loose with Chazal, that we don't take it seriously, that we're not reverent, that we don't base things on it, but that there is a certain greater flexibility than in halacha, both in terms of, and these are different issues also, which require more discussion, you know, whether something is literal or historical is different than the question whether it is binding. When we talk about a binding, I mean, well, we have to figure out what it is first. Is this a symbolic statement? You know, is it meant to be a historical statement? Is it meant to be a literal statement? You know, what is the nature of certain Dibrei Chazal? That's one question. And the second question is, you know, once we've defined what that is, the ones that are literal and historical, or the ones that are symbolic and represent some, you know, hashkafa value, amida, etc., whatever they are, then the next question is, you know, how binding are they? In the sense of, you know, is it, you know, mishpat echad yelachem? Even if that's the only statement, are these etzot tovas, or do they really have the force of being, you know, kind of, you know, hashkafically normative, if one can say such a thing? These are very important questions. The idea that we always revere and that initially we assume the relevance of and even the literalness of Chazal is not so much questioned by the Gaonim. The role of Medrash or Agadata in Halacha is yet another area, you know, which is sometimes conflated with the questions of literalness and bindingness, or being binding, but which again needs to be separated from it, both in terms of situations where there are competing sources, Halacha versus Agadata. More interestingly, in a case where there is a void, and you find only, you know, midrashic, you know, material, you know, on a certain topic. Mashal l'mad v'domer, that you could be mechalek, a parallel discussion about mystical material, divrei, you know, Kabbalah, not Kabbalah Mesorah, Kabbalah, meaning Jewish mysticism. What is the role of, you know, Sefer HaBahir and HaZohar and, you know, Kabbalistic notions? Generally speaking, the default, you know, view of most of the Mefarshim is that in matters of halacha, where there are halachic sources, this is very minimal or non-existent. But in a vacuum, you know, what is the status of these? And similarly, parallel, but you could, of course, be mechalek, what about Divrei Agada? What about citing Divrei Agada as halachic evidence and proof? A lot of the statements in the Gaonim that, you know, Divrei Chazal are not binding are statements having to do with a contradiction or in an area of halacha, particularly some of the statements of Rav Sadia and Shira and Rav Hai. The question of the status of Dibrei Chazal in general, of course, also is addressed by the Rambam in other places, in the beginning of Yana Chazaka, in the Mar Nevuchim, directly. But again, it's also important to get the overall impression of the Rambam. If you look at Mar Nevuchim, I'm at least very struck by the fact how much of what the Rambam writes in Mor Nevuchim, even in philosophical contexts, is supported by Chazal. While the Rambam is, and we'll discuss his view here in just a second, is critical, you know, in making distinctions, and very, very bikorti critical against people who are, you know, agada literalists under all conditions. Nonetheless, you know, the Rambam's reliance on Medrash is, as you know, is something that is, you know, natural. And, you know, default implicit, even in Mordevuchim, is something which is, to me, very striking. Here, as I said, there's a whole question of where the Rambam actually draws a line in some of these places. Maybe next time we'll finish this Haktam, we'll speak about it. And, of course, there's also the very famous controversy about the view of the Ramban, if we're talking about the greats. The Ramban, in his Perush Al HaTorah, you know, can obviously be very independent of Medrash, but on the whole, uses Medrash, you know, very much as part of his worldview. It's part of his part of the discussion in the vocabulary, even though he, you know, also is very comfortable to make suggestions, either as suggestions or in some cases as you know, what he believes to be the more decisive pshat in a different direction. But there's also, you know, the very famous, you know, comment of the Ramban, which historians, you know, are very, very much debate, you know, the authenticity of in the context of his vikuach with, you know, Pablo Christiani, you know, where the Ramban, in defending Biados against some of the claims that, you know, the Talmud itself or that Medrash itself, you know, supports some of the theological claims of Christianity. The Ramban has a comment there in which he, you know, dismisses the, you know, authority of Medrash. If you read the whole Vikuach, the Ramban after that, you know, basically defends or reinterprets the Medrash. And in most of the Vikuach, he's quoting Midrashim, you know, to support the Jewish view itself. So there's a big, you know, question, maybe we'll discuss it just a little bit, you know, how, you know, much that statement of the Rambam was a statement, Ramban was a statement under pressure, you know, not really reflecting his view, or no, whether he too was more open-minded in the, or more open, you know, to dismissing or distinguishing. The Ramban there draws a tripartite distinction between Jewish texts. He talks about, you know, Tanakh and its sanctity and how every, you know, word of Tanakh has to be accepted, you know, as Torah B'Sinai and as, you know, completely incontrovertible. And then he speaks about the Talmud, which he says that the halakha, you know, is, of course, normative and binding and in every way. It has, you know, divine source, etc. But he says, you know, the agaitic statements of the Talmud, you know, that that's something which is not binding. And Medrash in general, you know, if it doesn't hold up to logical scrutiny, that's his third level, you know, just doesn't have that level of authority. So we'll talk about the Ramban's view very quickly next time, and then we'll actually start. The Rambam, though, here develops three perspectives, and with this we'll just conclude. I say I'm already over time, but maybe I'll read that just a little bit next time also, because it's very pointed the way he described it. The Rambam basically develops three perspectives on Medrash. The first one is the one that he ascribes to, you know, the Hamonam, who are sincere and well-meaning, but who are unsophisticated. Again, some of the language is very important. He says basically they mean well, but instead of, you know, raising the, you know, profile of Torah by adamantly, you know, insisting that every word of the Medrash is literal, they end up you know, projecting you know, Chazal in a way that is not honorable, and, you know, that would undermine their stature and the stature of Torah, you know, in the larger world community. And therefore, while the Rambam applauds their amuna and their sincerity and so on, their yiras shamayim in a way, you know, he's very severe about the negative consequences of this. But even much more severe is his critique of the second group. Second group are the people who he says, you know, perceive themselves as sophisticated, but, you know, presume to be, you know, wiser than and more sophisticated than the Chachamim. So they're dismissive, you know, they ridicule Chazals that they don't understand. And he says, you know, those are people who have certain character, likely to have certain character to begin with in terms of their arrogance. He's also not so impressed with the intellectual integrity of such people. The Rambam's argument is, and this is what basically, for a totally different reason, I was quoting from the Maral yesterday, you know, that Maral also, of course, that's what he's doing in Be'er HaGola, is trying to, you know, develop rules, and thus he's speaking specifically about Mamare Chazal. I should just, you know, add Derech Agav. That's one of the, in the world of Makshava, in the Maral, chose basically to make his impact, you know, not on Parshanut HaMikra so much as was traditional, just fascinating, but on defending Mamare Chazal. I mean, that's what he did. I mean, that's what he does. I mean, he has books that are dedicated to doing that, you know, including Be'er HaGola, and of course he wrote Chidushei Agados, like the Marshad. It's a whole genre, basically, and Maral was very much at the forefront of that. But if you read any of the Maral's Svarim, doesn't matter what topic, the focal point is always Chazal, and always to interpret, you know, Divrei Chazal in a symbolic way, you know, to give context, etc. So the Rambam, when he, you know, is critical of the, and especially of the arrogance of this second group, says, you know, what the Maral, you know, says even more forcefully or more expansively later on, and that is, like, why would anybody, you know, who has admiration for, you know, the halachic stature of Chazal, and, you know, why would they assume that all of a sudden in a different discipline, you know, that these people become infantile, Rambam's word, you know, in their capacities, you know, and in their orientation. So the idea that you're not looking at this holistically in terms of who these people are, and that, you know, you can't see beyond your own limitations, is something which the Rambam is extremely critical of. And of course, his suggestion is that one take a third perspective on Chazal, and that is maximum reverence, the assumption, not assumption, the certainty, you know, that Chazal's wisdom and, you know, their authenticity and their authority apply, you know, to Medrash as well as to Halacha. But, you know, just as, you know, Shlomo HaMelech, you know, indicates that, you know, Mishle and Koheles, and this is what he quotes around him, Shira Shirim, you know, Mikra even, you know, should not be understood Kipshuto, but there are certain concepts and ideas that are expressed better in Chida Umashal, right? So too, Divrei Chazal, you know, have that status. And then the trick is to try to figure out what the... is this a class coming in?
Yeah.
Oh, so maybe we'll dive it outside. So no problem. So we, you know, Divrei Chazal are really have to be approached in that way, to try to figure out the wisdom of Chazal. And, you know, as an insider who's looking holistically to appreciate that depth. And that's what the Rambam. So I want to speak next time a little bit about that and about the Ramban. This is a short Hakdama, and then I want to speak about, you know, Tchias HaMesim and Mida Keneged Mida.